Welcome to the Bravo Dog Knowledge Podcast. I'm your host, Renee Erdman. I'm a certified behavior consultant and dog trainer. I own bravodog.ca, and you'll have to excuse my voice because I'm just getting over a cold, but we're in for a treat today. We are talking to Sarah Turner. She is a certified fear-free groomer, and you won't believe what she's got to tell us today. Hello, Sarah.
Hello. Can you hear me this time?
I can.
Yay.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thanks. Thanks for taking some time to chat on the podcast.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Cool. Yeah. Tell us a bit about yourself.
So I have been grooming for just over 5 years now. I went through all of the typical post-secondary education, you know, thought about getting a business degree, thought about psychology, but I've been around animals my whole life, and I realized pretty quickly that, you know, the traditional education wasn't for me, and I had to pursue something down the line of working with animals. And grooming is what stood out. So I went and in December of 2015 completed my grooming program and started working, but I realized pretty fast that the traditional way of grooming wasn't working, and that's kind of when I started exploring alternative ways of doing grooming to try to make it, you know, not only the best experience for myself but for the dogs. And it was like a night and day difference once I realized what a change it can be, just kind of, you know, getting on the same level with the dogs and making it pleasant for them as well.
So the fear-free program is what you you hooked up with, and so you went through in addition to your like your formal training, it was a separate program that you took. Tell me a bit about that program and what was there anything surprising about it when you took it?
Yeah, so you know, knowing the basics of grooming was fantastic, but once I learned about the fear-free program, it was just a game changer. So Fear Free was originally created for veterinary clinics. But once they saw the success of, you know, how much more, you know, what a better experience it was for the animals going to see the vet, which would normally be a very terrifying, scary, sometimes painful experience. They started kind of exploring what other pet professionals would benefit from this. And the next one on the list was grooming. You know, it's kind of always been this thing of, you know, your dog goes to the vet or they go to the groomer and it's just scary, but it's something that they have to do. And however that gets done, just get it done. And that phrase, you know, just get it done, is kind of really what Fear Free is all about, changing the mindset of. It's not about just getting it done at any cost. It's about getting the job done so that you can have long-term success versus just, you know, getting a haircut done this time and hope for the best the next time. So their whole mission is to, you know, kind of take away that fear and anxiety and stress that pets are so closely associated with going to these pet professionals, and making it an inclusive community of educating the people and the anyone else that cares for them.
Well, it makes sense that they would extend it to groomers, because you have to think dogs are actually, for a lot of dogs, they are, and cats I'm sure, are going to the groomer more frequently than they are going to the vet.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So that really directly impacts their welfare. Their, you know, that we know that anxiety and stress contributes to illness. The more frequently they're going into situations where they're having a negative experience, it then gets worse and worse and worse. It's compounded every single time they go and have a negative experience.
Yeah.
And that makes it harder to change, right?
You're absolutely right. Yeah. It's, you know, you'll hear quite commonly, a lot of people will say, oh, well, my dog hates going to the groomers, so we just kind of leave it as long as we can. And, you know, and then by that point, it's kind of too long, and now they're really matted and it's uncomfortable. And, you know, so they just hate going to the groomers because the groomer's not fun. But
yeah,
it's the whole experience isn't just the actual, you know, getting a bath and getting their haircut. It's their whole experience being there.
And it's the environment. Who's in the environment? Are there other dogs there?
Exactly.
All of those things, right?
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. It's, you know, ideally I would see all of my dogs for haircuts, you know, every 4 to 6 to 8 weeks. And, you know, going to the vet clinic, usually they only go in when they need it. And it should be more, you know, I offer experiences like coming in for a social visit, and that might just be a 15-minute session. They come in just to say hi to me, they get lots of treats, and then they get to go home. And that's kind of what it is. You know, they have social visits at going to the vet, so they can come in, get their nails done, or come have a social visit with the groomer, come in, have some treats, get your nails done, and go home. It doesn't always have to be a scary thing. It should be, you know, something that's at the very least they feel comfortable doing.
Yep, for sure. And I think that, you know, if we're lucky enough and we have a client that's got a puppy, then we can start really early and, you know, start making those positive associations so that they don't develop a negative, you know, response to this, the stuff that we unfortunately have put them through. Right.
Yeah.
But it seems like oftentimes I think it's human nature is that it's not a problem until it's a problem, right?
Yes.
And then we address it. So then the animal's got a full-fledged phobia of going to the groomer, has bit the groomer several times, is not, you know, now what do they do?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So what do you, you know, if somebody comes to you and says, hey, this is where we're at now, what do we do?
So if, you know, like you said, ideally they would come to me as soon as they get their puppy and we start, you know, the process of acclimating them to the environment, to the process, get them used to all the tools and stuff. But realistically, that doesn't happen every time. And quite often I will have owners that will come and say, hey, I've got a, say, 6-month-old puppy. It's been to the groomer once or twice. You know, as far as I know, nothing happened. But now I can't touch my dog's feet. And I offer consultations, just so that we can go over what kind of issues they've been seeing and just kind of explaining and breaking down to them what it is that they're seeing. So if all of a sudden you can't touch your dog's feet anymore, that could be one of many things, but likely what happens in traditional grooming is, say for nails, the dogs get held down, they have their legs restricted, and just quickly get the nails done. But what a lot of people don't realize is any sort of grabbing and holding and restraining is extremely terrifying, just as it would be for us. And so kind of breaking it down and for owners and comparing it to how they would feel themselves in that situation is really, honestly, I think the best way that I can get through to people is to just say things like, okay, well, think about if you had extremely sensitive feet and you went to go and get a pedicure done. Now, all of a sudden, the lady who's, you know, trying to hold your feet, she's holding them really tightly and your feet are really ticklish and you're really uncomfortable. It's kind of just comparing how you would feel in that situation and then put that in your dog's perspective. You know, they can't say, no, I don't like that. They'll try to pull away and they'll do whatever it takes to try to make that experience stop. And what a lot of people don't realize is that you have to stop and pull back and assess how your dog is doing. And a lot of pet professionals don't realize that if you just give them a second, you'll have a way better chance of figuring out what it is that you can accomplish on their level versus saying, well, this just has to be done.
Yeah. Oftentimes too, in terms of when it gets to that level of being so serious, that the animal, you know, has bit a few groomers maybe, they're completely petrified and terrified, exhausted after. I mean, I think a lot of dogs would be exhausted after grooming, but you know, I think definitely talking to your vet too can help. Having a conversation with them about, you know, what's going on and is there a way to make this better when working with a vet and maybe, or sorry, when working with a groomer and maybe finding a different groomer.
Yes.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, no. And it definitely becomes a group effort. I have numerous clients that have been working with their vet to find, you know, whether it be anti-anxiety medication, if there might be something biologically going on with their dog, mm-hmm. you know, might be a chemical imbalance or a hormone imbalance. I personally don't have any medical background, but these are the things that I've been hearing and noticing and how much more success I see working in conjunction with the other pet professionals to change that, because once it's really easy to have this fear happen and not realize what the cause is, and working with everyone to kind of break that down and see how we can fix that. And in a lot of cases, it's changing the groomers, you know, the association with the experience of going to the groomers is there, but changing the environment and the people interacting with your dog may make a huge difference. I see lots of dogs that have come to see me, and it's pretty much the same phrase over and over again. I've been going to this groomer for years, and just slowly over time, I realized that, you know, my dog just seems really uncomfortable there, and I don't know what's changed. So we thought we'd try someone new. And just having that slow reintroduction and kind of having your dog relearn that going to the groomers doesn't have to be a scary thing. It doesn't have to be terrifying and painful. It, you know, some it takes a little bit longer, but quite often I see it just kind of clicks in for them, because they're extremely intelligent creatures. So, you know, if they feel like their feelings and their experiences are valid and that they're going to be respected, it makes a huge difference for them.
Yeah, I think too, it just to empower clients to ask more questions. I think just going back to what you originally said is, yeah, we drop them off and then we don't know, you know, they go behind closed doors. And I think, I like to assume that everybody's doing the best that they can with what they've got. But unless you ask questions, you don't know. And also, you know, the groomer may be doing, again, they may think that they've got to just get the job done for the client. I can't imagine the amount of stress and pressure that a lot of groomers are under as well. So I get that. It's not a criticism, but I think that owners need to ask very specific questions. Off the top of your head, what are some specific questions you would encourage people to ask their groomer?
Yeah, it is. You're right. It's a huge trust thing. You know, it's the same thing as dropping your kid off at daycare or preschool or whatever it is. It's, you know, you don't know what goes on behind closed doors. One of the biggest things that I would encourage owners to ask is, you know, is there an opportunity for me to come and tour the place? You know, just kind of see what it's like, see the environment. It's not 100% that you'll see everything. Like you said, it's kind of, you got to give them the benefit of the doubt, but being able to have a conversation with the groomer and see the space, if that's something as small as, you know, can I come back and just walk through the space with my dog, see how your dog is. But really, I think the biggest questions for grooming specifically would be, you know, if my dog seems to start getting stressed out, they're having a hard time, what do you do in that situation? You know, what is your policy? What is your personal response to that? And you would want to hear things like, okay, well, you know, if they start to get worked up, start to get antsy, fidgety, we'll take them off the table, give them a break, let them walk around. Asking if they use food, you know, do you use treats or toys, anything like that to distract, encourage, reinforce, reward for certain things. I recently did a kind of refresher course on fear-free nail trims. And they talked a lot about the difference between using food as a distraction and a reward, and asking your groomer, okay, well, if my dog is super food motivated and, you know, would eat anything under the sun, why don't they ever want to eat when they come to see you? And that's a really good sign. If a dog stops eating, they're under a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety. So asking questions about, you know, where did the dogs stay when they're being groomed? You know, do they have access to food and water and things like that? Just things that'll make them more comfortable. My personal studio is one-on-one appointments. It's very quiet. There's no other dogs in there. There's no other people other than staff, whoever's working on them. There's some dogs that like to be in and out. So another question would be how your appointments booked. Mine are all booked one dog per appointment. There's some grooming salons that have, you know, they have all the dogs intake at the same time and then they all go home at the end of the day. But the majority of dogs won't do well sitting in a crate for, you know, 4 hours. That's, I wouldn't want to sit still for 4 hours.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And if there's any specific triggers or issues that you as the owner are aware of, just having that open conversation, it shouldn't be a just drop your dog off and that's it, you pick them up at the end of the day. It has to become a relationship, because it's about the whole experience even leading up to dropping them off. So yeah
I think too, some clients are surprised at, when I ask them, do you know, does the, first of all, a lot of times the feedback is they do fine, quote unquote, fine.
Yes.
And that's not specific enough for me. I like these specific questions that we ask, that we need to be asking, I think, to get more information, because fine to you is not necessarily fine to me. Like we were saying, it could be more about just getting the job done, which is not necessarily positive for the animal. So I think fine's just not enough information, but also asking if they have to use a muzzle, have they ever, and a lot of times the client has no idea.
Yeah.
So I think that there's nothing wrong with using a muzzle. However, if anybody's putting a muzzle on your dog without letting you know, asking or disclosing that they're doing that, that's to me not okay, because we really need to be able to have the opportunity to, muzzle train dogs ahead of time so that these things aren't just coming on them when they're under duress.
Yeah. And you know, their mouth is, that's everything. That's a very personal, literally in their face experience. And to have a foreign object just strapped to your face, if you have no idea what it is, that would be terrifying.
So I think, you know, given the opportunity to muzzle train if need be, but that's also to me a sign there are specific reasons why we might need to use muzzles for, you know, safety, but also the deeper question is why do we need to use that muzzle? There's obviously some fear, anxiety, and stress that needs to be addressed.
Yes.
So that's a sign for sure. So let's say, you know, live in a small town, there's not a fear-free groomer, and there's not even a groomer that the client feels comfortable using. Would you suggest that they start doing the grooming on their own, and even if it doesn't look cute, to just be doing some basics on their own to keep, you know, the matting away and things like that?
I would. It's a bit of a gray area question.
Okay.
But it is a very good question. I have quite a few clients that have approached me with that very question, you know, is this possible that I can groom my dog at home? And that's usually when I'll set up, you know, sit down, we'll have a conversation about why they feel, you know, it would be better for their dog to groom them at home. And a lot of the time it's, well, every time I've dropped my dog off at the groomer, they go in, they're shaking, they come out, they're terrified. It just doesn't feel like a good experience. I don't feel good. But they're happy. I can brush them, comb them at home. I feel like I could do this. And as long as they're, you know, understanding that it might not look the greatest, but it ultimately comes down to how is your dog feeling you grooming versus going to the groomers? Because in the end, yes, we would all love our dogs to look perfect and fashionable, but it has to come down to comfort and function versus fashion. You know, if they're more comfortable with you handling them at home, then absolutely. That being said, I would 200% recommend that they educate themselves as much as they can on the products, the process, you know, what kind of tools do they need? Because really all of this pet care industry is quite unregulated, and there's a lot of misinformation and lack of education out there. So if an owner is trying to get into this, even if it's just for their own dog, there's a lot of things that they, you know, should do some research on. But I would definitely recommend and support owners that wanted to do themselves, as long as they were willing to put the time and effort into educating themselves about how to do it properly, so that not only is their dog safer, but that it's going to be safe for them. Because, you know, like you said, it can be a terrifying thing, so let's make it as good as we can for them.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think that there are often people out there that don't realize when they get a certain breed type how much grooming is involved, or, you know, preventative and maintenance care is going to be needed?
Absolutely. Yeah, that is definitely in the the top questions and comments that I get is, I had no idea I was going to need to put this much effort into caring for my dog. But it is, I always encourage people to do their research. You know, pick five breeds that you think that you would like, and start doing research on how much exercise are they going to need? What kind of maintenance am I going to have to do for their coat? You know, is this breed going to fit in with my lifestyle? If, you know, this is, you get a dog that needs a haircut every 6 weeks, but you can't make the time to make the grooming appointments, having a dog that needs a haircut every 6 weeks probably isn't going to be the dog for you.
Yeah. What are the top high maintenance dog breed or breed mixes that you would put in that list?
I would say, unfortunately, one of the most common breeds out there is also probably the most common that people don't realize
highest need.
Yeah. Is it would be any of the kind of doodle mixes, the poodle mixes.
Yeah.
And I'm not really sure where the rumor started or where the information came from, but I have a lot of doodle owners that have come to me and said, well, my breeder said I don't need to, you know, they don't need to have a haircut before their first birthday. But what they don't realize is having that mixed coat, it's not only mixed with a poodle who needs a haircut often, but you're mixing it, and now you have this coat that is a little bit unpredictable, and it needs maintenance from practice. The first day they come home to you is, you know, you have to start exposing them to things like that, because it's hard enough with predictable coats to stay on top of matting and, you know, the brushing and the combing, but a coat that is unpredictable, that seems like you look at it the wrong way and they're matted, that's where you have to start working with your groomer on getting on a maintenance schedule.
Yeah. And I think, again, like, human nature is that we're not necessarily proactive about things.
Yes.
We wait until it's a problem. So
yeah.
Again, it, you know, the sooner that you can start, even just with these associations, right?
Yeah.
Then the better. So what other breed types do you see quite a few of that are pretty high maintenance in the grooming department?
I would say A lot of the Maltese or Maltese mixes, because they have such a soft, fine coat. And traditionally they are left long, but that takes daily brushing and combing. But the longer the coat, the better it looks on the breed, it seems.
Right.
But yeah, so I would say really any breed that has that soft, fine coat and wanting it long, if you're not willing to put in the, or not able to even put in the time for brushing and combing daily, then you're going to run into an issue. Not even just coat type, a lot of the smaller breeds, so, you know, a Yorkshire Terrier, you know, the Yorkies, or any sort of small dogs, they seem prone to not enjoying the experience of being handled. And I feel like that comes a lot from how tiny they are. So I would say any breed that has a more or less difficult coat, if it's really curly, you know, you've got the ringlets, or it's really wavy, or any of these dogs that are a quite tiny breed, exposing them and getting them used to the process is really important, because it doesn't take much for them to have a bad experience.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have any resources that you would recommend, like online resources or websites that can help point people in the right direction in terms of the right equipment or products or anything like that? Or maybe that's something that you're going to have on your own website someday.
Yeah, no, it is. On the actual Fear Free website, they have some resources for owners. They have a directory listing for Fear Free certified professionals in your area. There's not very many Fear Free certified groomers. Being the first and only one in BC.
Yeah, that's amazing.
But I really enjoy the Fear Free community. They are so supportive and will do as much as they can to help point you in the right direction for professionals. But in terms of the kind of products and tools that owners would need at home, honestly, I feel like at this point, the best bet, you know, you can watch YouTube videos, you can Google what kind of tools do I need, and put in your specific dog's breed. But reaching out to a professional, in this case, a groomer, and just kind of asking them what kind of stuff would I need, I would recommend setting up a consultation so that the groomer would have a better idea, being able to put their hands in the coat and feel it, get a better assessment. But the internet is a very powerful and important.
It can be, it's either good or it's really bad.
Yes. As long as you can find the right information, you're on the right track. Yeah. But definitely.
Well, I think too, like reaching out to, even if a fear-free groomer is not in your area, I think that they're so passionate about what they're doing, that even if you send them an email, that they might be able to point you in the right direction. I know that, you know, people reach out to me for resources or referrals all the time as well. So we all have the same goal in mind, which is to help your dog and to help you. So yeah.
Yeah. Wow, and cool. I would say most groomers, if you did either send them a phone or send them an email or give them a phone call, would be happy to at least give you the basics of what kind of brushes and combs. Because pretty much every grooming community that I'm part of, one of the biggest things is, you know, I can't, you know, my life would be so much easier, my job would be so much easier if, you know, the owners would just do the brushing and combing in between at home, so that I wouldn't have to go through this every time they come in. So I think finding a way to bridge that connection between owner and groomer, there's just such a disconnect there. It's, you know, the owners, I wish that my groomer would tell me why my dog has to be shaved every time they go in, and the groomer on the other hand saying, well, I just wish that the owner would do the maintenance at home. That's where I try to bridge that relationship and say, well, if you educate the owner, because, you know, we want to assume the best, but like you said earlier, there's only so much that you can do with how much you know. And if you're not educated and you don't realize that there's something that you could be doing, it's not going to get done. So making that connection with the owner to groomer relationship is really important, because once you know the basics and you can understand what you're doing from the owner side, it's going to be a game changer, because it's once you know what you need to know, it becomes a lot easier.
Yeah, just often miscommunication or no communication, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah. So it definitely helps. Well, I think this has been fascinating, very interesting. And I hope that some of this information helps people out there if they're having grooming issues or they're just curious or doing research. So thanks so much for chatting with us today. I think it's been very informative.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I receive lots of emails from owners not even in Canada, and just being able to give them some basics, some questions, answer some of their concerns is nice. So I mean, if you can't physically go and see your groomer, sending them an email can be quite helpful. So
and what's your website?
So my website is refinedtouch.ca, and that's RUFFINED.ca.
Excellent. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you very much for having
me. Take care.
You too.
Thanks for joining us on the Bravo Dog Knowledge podcast. Be sure to leave us a glowing review on iTunes or whatever platform you are listening to us on. Visit us at bravodog.ca. And don't forget, if you love woof culture like we do, which is woofcultr.com, the awesomest clothing for dog training professionals that you can find, you can use our code for 15% off, which is BravoDog15, all caps, for 15% off. Hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll catch you next time.